All right, it's Film Study with Ken McCusick. We're back again to talk about week two as the Ravens had their home opener victory over the Browns 24-10. This time we are going to talk about the offense. So joining me like always, Ken McCusick. How you doing, Ken?
Life is good, Josh. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. I've got the Oriole game on, but I kind of have the season's over. I don't know why I watch habits. Now it's a habit.
Still wearing an Oriole hat, but I see the big new addition is the Bowser jersey.
I did. I told you a few weeks ago that Bowser was my guy, and we're going to talk offense today, but I'm going to make sure to get in a Bowser question down at the end during our mailbag segment because he is my favorite guy on the team right now.
So where can they send their questions?
They can send their questions. Well, best case is to you. They can send them to me if you want, but you're the guy that knows how to answer them.
So, fantastic. Why don't we send them to # Film Study Mailbag on Twitter. We'll try and get to as many as we can tonight. So,
all right, but since it's Twitter, let's call it a hashtag instead of a pound sign.
I'm sorry. Hashtag, of course.
Yeah. So send them to your Twitter is at Film Study Ravens. But what's the hashtag you want to use?
Film Study Mailbag.
Film Study Mailbag. All right. Film Study Mailbag is exactly what we'll do. That'll make it nice
and obviously,
and easy.
If you're listening to this now, it won't be for tonight's show, but we have this segment on defense and offense. So,
right.
Future weeks, send your question.
Right. You can send your question right now, but I suggest that maybe you wait until Sunday's game in London and then send the question after there because it might have more relevance. So, let's start talking about the Browns game. The offense, we were really going into this game after week one of seeing the offense run the ball, but not do much. So we really still had a question of Joe and his health. So see anything with that this week? Is Joe, we saw one long ball from Joe.
Mm-hmm. That didn't go well. It was intercepted. Ended up being effectively a punt. But yeah, he threw the ball much better. Seemed to be sharp. Mid-range passes worked out pretty well, and he was under a lot of pressure. The Greg Williams really threw the kitchen sink at him in terms of differentiation of blitzes by number and by scheme, and he did everything Dean Pease isn't doing in terms of scheming for pressure right now. We do expect that to still come from Pease when the games get closer, and but the Browns were under pressure here, and they put pressure on Flacco, and for the most part, it did not work. Flacco was very good under pressure.
Right, and that long ball went as a interception, but it looked more like a miscommunication error, not a problem with Joe's back or arm. So it was good to see that he could throw the ball long,
yes,
even if it went way too far.
Yeah.
So the Ravens did a few things different this time. Week one, they had a whole bunch of tight ends line up. Week two, it seemed like they had more running backs than normal.
Yeah, they did. They used all three guys a little bit. I guess everybody had at least six carries. We had Allen West and the new guy, Alex Collins, who looks like a really electric runner. Also, unfortunately, a fairly frequent fumbling club player. So he got time. The tight end play, in terms of targets, got a little more specific that Watson really looks like now a go-to guy for Flacco. You know, maybe in some ways like Pitta was a safety blanket for him on some of the throws where he was looking for a mid-range target when the blitz was on, and that worked well.
Alex Collins, he's from Seattle, right?
That's right.
Where he came from?
He's barely played. He was a rookie last year at 31 carries, 4 yards a carry, I believe is the number. Caught all 11 passes thrown his way. And from what we saw a little bit on tape, he was a pretty good run blocker. So all in all put together, you think maybe a third down back. But, you know, he's got some home run hitting speed. And one of the things that the announcers made a point of was that the Ravens don't really have a guy like that. West is not a home run hitter. And they even made the point on Allen's 37-yard run that he didn't have that fourth gear to go to finish
right.
That. Now, it was really nice to see a runner who can occasionally break one for big distance.
Right, and I thought it was a good surprise as a Ravens fan to see Collins go out there and do really well and be exciting when he's on the field. I know one play he ran sideways pretty far and was able to make some moves in order to get something that should have been a loss of 5 yards. I think he broke even or maybe gained 1 yard.
Yeah, that's. I remember the plays run right there, but he did a good job of finding the corner. We haven't really seen him use the middle of the field yet, and that'll be interesting too to see if he can be a cutback runner. But as an edge speed guy, very exciting.
All right, we're going to get in a little bit. We'll get to the offensive line, and that's generally we're going to break that down, and that's where we go into real detail. But penalties, have the Ravens learned from the previous years? Because the first 2 weeks, it seems like penalties haven't been too bad on the Ravens side.
Well, they had the first week was a big week for penalties on the offensive line, at least. So they
Okay.
had a bunch of holding calls, three by Jensen, and they had one to Hurst, I think. And I'm trying to remember who else had one. But anyway, they had a bunch of holding calls. This week, only one penalty on the offensive line. So that's a big positive to move forward and not have any false starts. Just one holding call on Tony Bergstrom, who we're going to get to later, had a very tough game.
Right now, they used the unbalanced line 5 times. How do you describe it? What's the difference between a balanced and unbalanced line?
Sure. Yeah, let's explain that for the fans out there that haven't seen it before. So typically, an unbalanced line means you use five linemen still, but you move one of them, and it's usually a tackle to the opposite side. So you have three to one side of center and one on the other side of center. And in this case, they moved both of their tackles to the same side. So Stanley and Howard were next to each other. And each time they did it, they used Howard on the insides. They're really almost using Howard like a guard. And then on the opposite side, they either had Yanda when he was in the game early, or they had Hurst later in the game when they ran the unbalanced to the right side. So they've done it a fair amount before. They used to run it as a bread and butter play in 2008, but they still use it a little bit now. 5 times is a lot for one game.
Okay, that's a lot. The final score, the Ravens won 24-10. Again, we talked last episode about the defense, and they got 5 turnovers again. But then with the 5 turnovers, the offense could still only put up 24 points. Is that an issue that's going to catch up with them? Are they not, the offense is not holding up to their side of the ball yet?
I would agree with that. They weren't taking chances. Now, when you get in the second half and you're running the ball just consistently, that offense is not doing the things they're doing to optimize points. They're optimizing the usage of time. So it's natural that they probably wouldn't be as effective moving the ball. And we've made the comment about you don't win because you run because you win. And
Right.
that has held up the offense in the second half of both games.
All right. So yes, it's these games. So these games have been such clear wins that for that second half, the offense's job is really run out the clock and get the
That's
clock
right.
out. So that has kept the score down low.
That's right. And I think it's difficult to judge the offense on that basis. There's some sites and whatnot that judge offenses primarily on what they do in the first half or even the first quarter as being the most important, where you play the widest open offense and you've got the least security about winning the game at that point. So your fourth quarter offense is not necessarily a very good indicator at all of how good your offense is.
All right. Is it a good sign that they're able to run the ball well? That they were both of these games, the running game was pretty good.
Right. I mean, I think the biggest sign is that they were able to run the ball when they wanted to run the ball and the other team knew they were going to run the ball. So that's a very big positive. And when they could do that and grind out some first downs in the second half, it's worth a lot.
All right. Explain to me and the listener who's just the occasional Ravens fan, what is the Naked Boot?
Okay, so Naked Boot, we record it on the sheet when we see one, a zone block left, Naked Boot right, because it's almost always Joe Flacco wants to roll to the right while they're selling via play action a sweep or run by a zone scheme to the left side. So the entire offensive line zone blocks to the left. You often run the play with a fullback leading the play, but certainly with at least one back. You fake the handoff to him, and the defense hopefully moves and follows the runner while Flacco turns around. Flacco's very good with play action, turns around to his left and rolls to the right, if that makes sense. So he's turned around for the field, so he turns to his left to roll right. And the main thing you need to do is you need to fool the guy, the edge defender, on the play side. So the naked side that Flacco's rolling to, if that edge defender is fooled, you usually have a chance for a lot of time in the pocket and a big play down the field. If that edge defender isn't fooled, then you got to get rid of the ball quickly to an underneath receiver, and it might be a gain of a yard or two or an incomplete pass.
Right. So they did it four times, and like you're saying, the whole point of that is to try to get the big play. So right. Four times, and they went for 13 yards, 5 yards, minus one, and minus two.
That's right. And it was in that order. So one thing about the naked boot is the backside defender usually gets a little bit smarter each time about picking up on it. So that's exactly what happened in this game. It was Ogbo on that side a lot, and he was getting better at picking it up and chasing Flacco down when that happened, and then he'd have to dump off to a shorter receiver.
So that's something the Ravens should be working on, is hiding that better.
Hiding it better or doing it less. I mean, I honestly think you can get away with the naked boot usually once per game,
okay,
and not five times per game. But they really were trying to get Joe away from the pocket in this game to get him rolling out right to try and throw the ball. And for a lot of the times, that was really successful. To get him rolling to the right was successful. And he threw one touchdown pass to Buck Allen on exactly that kind of a roll, and generally was successful.
All right. The offense was really aggressive in that first half. If you think about with the play with time running out, and they decide to get one more passing play in.
To try to get that
touchdown. That's John Harbaugh being super aggressive for a game that generally wouldn't see a play like that.
Yeah, Harbaugh deserves credit for that, because they had to have something in their playbook that they knew, or maybe Morningweg, that is a four-second play. There's 5 seconds left on the clock. You're probably going to get home clock management. That clock was so screwed up, I don't know if the officials would have taken it. But generally speaking, how the play clock runs out, if the person who's operating the clock is doing it reasonably well, then they'll let it go. So they had to have a play they thought would take only 4 seconds, and they had this little very short boot right throw to Macklin, and there was a second left at the end of that play, even though he caught it, and they still had to kick off and actually recover an onside kick.
Right. I had one problem with that play. I don't think Joe knew it was supposed to be a four-second play, because he seemed to take all the time in the world.
they have to have practiced it.
I know they practiced it, but as soon as I saw, you know what it is? To me, 4 seconds seems like a short amount of time.
Right.
To Joe, he knows about what 4 seconds takes, and he used every bit of 4 seconds.
Yeah, I mean, 4 seconds is a sack to Joe Flacco.
Right, so right. But, I mean, he had time to get out of the pocket, and then he threw it. And I did not think he had enough time for that. And thankfully, the guy caught it, and we didn't have to have the discussion of, is there 1 second left on the clock?
Right.
Okay, is there anything else that you want to go over that I've missed before we break down the offensive line?
I thought the offensive line as a group did a very good job of giving Joe some pocket time, even when they rushed with numbers. So they rushed with seven on several occasions, and they even got Joe a couple of ample time and space opportunities with seven.
Seven's a lot.
Yeah, oh yeah, seven's pretty much the most anybody ever rushes. Right. Occasionally you'll see an eight, but seven is about the most. That's really cover zero, which means all of your individual receivers are covered by one guy, and the fifth guy better not go out, because your fifth eligible receiver, right, if he goes out, it's going to be uncovered.
Sure. That kind of makes me wonder why the passing game didn't take advantage of that more. But if they had the pressure of seven, that's a different thing. You're trying to just defend seven, so you got to realign for that. So, all right. So 67 snaps, not counting the kneel down at the end.
Right. So those are always excluded from the snaps. Everybody was wondering how I score, and I guess that's what you're getting at here, is that they had 68 snaps, and you'll see that in most lists, but one of those doesn't count. It's the kneel, because it's not competitive. So I guess we'll just start with Ronnie Stanley here and start talking through the offensive line one player at a time. I thought Ronnie had a better game than he did against the Bengals. One thing that you look at the schedule and really think about what this might be would be the first meeting with Myles Garrett, who's the number one overall draft pick for the Browns. But Garrett is hurt, and so that'll have to wait, and I think that's just fine with Stanley. So he got Nate Orchard for a lot of the game. And unfortunately, Nate Orchard beat him for three separate pressure events. That's not terrible for a 67 snap game, but Nate Orchard is not one of the premier pass rushers in the league either, and he beat him for three separate events. All were effectively pressures. One ended up being a QH because Flacco held the ball too long. But if you want details on the plays, I'll ask you, go to the article on Russell Street Report, take a read of it, and that's really set up so you can go and watch on Game Pass and review and see if you're seeing the same thing. So we're going for, you know, kind of a transparent film review here, and are we seeing the same thing? So Stanley's overall grade, he got 0.78 per play. I've got the details online. You can take a look at it. With adjustment, that's a B at tackle. So decent step up. He had a C-plus in his first game. Had some problems definitely with Carl Lawson in that one. So hopefully we're seeing a kind of a trend of improvement coming back from injury, which was similar to what we saw last year with him.
That's good. Improvement. All right, so you gave him a B. So that's a good grade. I'll take that any day. How about James Hurst? Seemed to struggle, right?
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. He struggled fairly significantly in this game. He was the Ravens, got the worst grade of any Raven who played the full game here. He is beaten for parts of two penetrations. Penetration, by the way, is the term I use for when a running back is taken down for a loss. There's a loss on a run play, and a lineman is responsible for that because they blew a block. That's a penetration. It's worth the same as a pressure, minus two. It's not worth more because in terms of the win probability change, it really isn't any worse than a pressure. So that's why I have them scored out that way. So you have parts of two penetrations, parts of two pressures, parts of two sacks. I charged him for half of that first sack, which was his biggest deduction. He had two guys that he could have blocked on that play. He could have blocked Kirksey. He could have blocked Burgess. That's number 58 and 52 if you look at the film. But he didn't block either, and that ended up being a sack that he shared with Allen on that play. Had nine missed blocks in the game. That's really bad. But missed blocks I kind of classify into two cases. There's missed blocks where you move into level two, you don't make a block. Or sometimes when you pull and you fail to make a block. Those aren't good, but they're not as bad as the other kind, where you're beaten by the defensive lineman opposite you, perhaps driven back into the backfield, perhaps a play that might have been a pressure or might have been a loss had he got a hold of the running back. But in those cases, those are much worse events than just missing a block in level two, for example. And he had three of those in the game. Converted 7 of 10 pulls on the game. That's a positive, but all in all, 0.65 per play, a D+, and unfortunately not what we want. We need to get a little better out of James Hurst this season, hopefully about a C average, and I'd be happy with that at left guard.
All right, just nice average play. We don't need anything special. Just hold down your position.
There you go.
Speaking of guys that need to improve, Jensen.
So, yeah, he had a tough week the first week, and I guess that's what you're getting at with the
exactly.
Three holding calls. So he came back this week and I thought played pretty well. He did a fairly decent job with individual blocks, and he only allowed a portion of one pressure event. It was a complex sack where I ended up giving him a third of it. I really had to think about how to assign it. Gave half of it to Allen again on that play and gave a sixth of it to Hurst, but a third of it went to Jensen. Otherwise, he didn't have any pass blocking errors. He had eight missed blocks. Now, that's a lot at center, so it's a concern of sort, but four of those were misses in level two, and four of those were came on plays where he got beat or he whiffed on a block. And so those are more serious, and none of them ended up costing him points because none of them turned into a pressure or a penetration, but he did miss those blocks, and if he did it again, I think against a different team, his grade level would probably slip due to the change of events. Nonetheless, good comeback. Looked to me like Jensen got hurt during the game. So he had a very bad train wreck of a collision that was in level two, and it looked very bad, but he got up and looked like he was hobbling around a little after that, but finishing the game and finishing effectively was impressive on his part.
All right, well, speaking of being hurt, I don't want to get to Marshall Yanda yet because I think that is obviously the big story with the offense going away from this game. So let's finish out the other linemen with Bergstrom, who came in to replace Yanda, and then we'll get to Austin Howard, and then let's have a talk about Yanda and where we go from there.
Okay, sure thing. So we'll go with Howard first because he plays a different position at right tackle. So Howard had an excellent game. He didn't allow a single pressure event, which is exactly what you want out of your tackle. You can take some run blocking errors at tackle, and you can take some misses because tackles can't always make a block on a run play. But you can't have your tackles giving up pressure. So he was not beaten for any. And he did have a shared penetration event where he got shed by Nassib. But he was otherwise had a very solid game. And he's really been the Ravens' best healthy now lineman through two games. Now, and made out a game and a half, but Howard made it through two games.
Right. Now, isn't he the guy that you've been saying maybe he needs to move to guard?
Yeah, I have to admit that I was wrong about that, and Hurst has not played that well at guard, but I don't think Howard could handle the pulling responsibilities either on the inside. So Howard's at the right place, and he's played well, and I've got no complaints about the way this is working out, and I even think Hurst is trying to improve at guard and might actually end up being a fairly decent player for us this year.
All right. Now, Bergstrom came in when Yanda went out, and the really time I noticed him was when he got a holding call.
Yeah, he had a very tough second half. I mean, he was fairly consistently beating. It looks like to me as if he's not physical enough, honestly, to play the position. So I've got a long list of plays, and normally I put the quarter and time in there, but I'm just allowing people to go through and look at the verbs in each case. So really quickly, horse racing format. Bowled by Shelton to blow up an RM0. Allowed Agba to get hands up for a pass defense. Bowled by Orchard to blow up a RR-2. That's a run right -2. Bowled by a twisting Orchard. That was to get into the backfield despite the fact that it didn't create a pressure. Pancaked by Agba on RM1. Missed pull on pass play. Bowled by Shelton on RM1. Bowled by Shelton for shared penetration on RM-1. Held Schobert in level 2. So that's an awful lot of bad verbs for one player in 31 snaps. So not a good thing. It worked out to 0.35 per play, and 0.67 is now passing at guard, even though I adjusted my scale down this year. So he was far, far away from a passing score. And honestly, we've heard Harbaugh talk this week a little about Illuminor and how much he's improved and putting the pieces together and seeing how poorly Tony played and how well, how much talking up is being done for Illuminor. It wouldn't shock me if he gets the start in London. I think if it's not happening in London, it very well could happen.
And that would be his first start, his first career start.
First career,
right?
Start. And of course, Illuminor is from London. So, or from the UK. I think he's from London.
Then it sounds like, hey, you're playing the Jags, you're in London, you let him play. Why not let him start? Especially when Bergstrom performed so poorly. Now, now we got to get to it. The whole reason Bergstrom was in the game was because of Marshall Yanda.
Well, sure, Yanda, we know who he is. We know what he means to this franchise. The hushed tones the other players have talked about him in terms of his leadership and what he meant on the field are I think, all very meaningful.
Right. He's an A every time you grade him. He gets
an awful lot of A's. That's true. 0.94 per play in this game. Just allowed half a pressure. That was his only missed block. Was that, and that's an A, whether adjusted or not. And I don't know how serious the injury is, and I only hope that this is not the one rehab which breaks the camel's back. It often happens with players in their 30s. That they don't want to come back one more time from a rehab. We heard that from Ray Lewis when he retired, and I really hope we do not hear that from Yanda, because Hall of Fame legacy may be on the line.
Okay. So you're saying he needs to play more if he wants Hall of Fame?
He needs a few more years.
Now, you missed in your notes the most impressive play by Marshall Yanda, which was, he fractured his ankle, yet he walked off the field with a fractured ankle on his own. I don't know how you do that.
I could not believe that. You see all these ACLs, and honestly, you or I get some sort of we could get a pretty severe tear of something and still run around and put a brace on it and kind of work with it. But That was incredible to me. I mean, that's just for the kind of injury he apparently has. I can't imagine the kind of pain he was
no,
in.
No, and he's twice the man I am. To put that much weight on a fractured ankle,
yeah.
I cannot imagine. And right. It was impressive and shows the type of just guy he is.
Yeah. Very, very tough.
So that's a really big loss to the Ravens.
It's absolutely enormous.
So, yeah. You think Illuminor could be the answer? Obviously, he's not the same guy. Do they have to go out and look outside of the organization?
They did today, and they signed a couple of guys. I think that, first of all, the Ravens are down to 7 linemen with the loss of Yanda, so they had to bring Illuminor up. And then they brought Matt Skura up from the practice squad, and he started all the preseason games and got a fair amount of playing time in the preseason. So he could certainly jump in at guard at some point. He's not a big physical guy. He's a kind of a finesse player, a little bit smaller guy. A little more compact probably will give him better leverage than Bergstrom, but Illuminor is the physical option. He's the guy who throws his weight around and will you know, hopefully provide a physical spark to the run game if that's who the Ravens want to be. The other guy they picked up, a guy from off the Bears practice squad, was a guy named, I'm going to mispronounce his name, but it's like Dujou Joseph, and he's the ninth lineman now and is a tackle. From all the reports I've heard, he's an extremely lean 6'6", 300 tackle. Apparently needs a lot of work in the weight room, but one of the things that scouts really like about him is he has freakishly long arms at 35 and a half inches. So you can go a long way with that. Jared Gaither had very long arms, and Stanley does as well. So it is a very nice starting point for a tackle, but you also have to have feet, and you have to have a little more sand in the pants too.
I see. I was just looking up about Illuminor, and you were correct. He is from a suburb of London. So it would make sense to try to get him into this week. And on the last episode, I was telling you, like, does anyone really care in London about football? So what's interesting about Illuminor is he grew up playing rugby and cricket, like you would expect in London. But he grew interested in American football after watching the 2007 Dolphins-Giants game that was played at Wembley Stadium in London.
Well, that's cool.
So, all right, so that answers my question. Yes, the NFL going and playing games in London, it's doing something.
Mm-hmm. There really is a tremendous Ravens fan base over there. I've been on the UK Ravens Facebook page and spending a fair amount of time this week. And, I mean, they've got parties playing. There's all kinds of things they've got going on. And the questions they ask of football, very high level. I mean, you know, it's just like, you know, we get around here among knowledgeable fans. I mean, it's impressive.
That's good. Well, that'll be fun to go and check it out. I imagine it'll be flooded with Raven fans in London this weekend, and that'll be a mm-hmm. cool experience.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get to the mailbag. So again, on Twitter, send your mailbag questions to hashtag filmstudymailbag, and we will get to them. The first one up is SDan31, which I think we've got to a lot, but how big of a loss will Yanda be to the success of this season?
Yeah, it's a good question. Of course, it's really hard to state because sometimes the way to make your team completely turn the corner is to replace your most struggling player with a great free agent acquisition or a player who's available who's just is outstanding and you have maybe have at a different position. Yanda's loss extends beyond the right guard position and they've replaced him. Currently, with just a terrible below replacement level player, in all honesty, they may be able to do a little bit better than that and get an average player at the position. They'll never have Marshall Yanda at the position. They signed another tackle today because Yanda was their emergency option at right tackle as well. He spent a fairly significant amount of time there, almost 2 seasons worth spread out over his career. And he was one of the guys who would give them that little extra bit of depth at tackle. So losing that is actually very significant as well. So I'm more concerned now about having Hurst on the field, not because I think Hurst isn't the best option at left guard now, because I'm afraid to lose one of the a tackle by playing guard. So hopefully the Yanda loss, they're able to get by it, but it's going to be a very, very difficult one to overcome.
All right. Air Nugget asks, Will Illuminor get the nod over Bergstrom at any point this season? I think we just covered that with hopefully this week in London. It's his second question. Do you expect Alex Collins to get more touches moving forward? I think that question comes with the just excitement to see a new guy out in the field moving.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, one good sign was that Harbaugh still put him back in the game after the fumble. And I listened to Harbaugh's interview after the game, and what he said was that he had a certain look in his eye that he liked that made him want to go out there again. But in the past, Harbaugh has put people in the doghouse for fumbling, and that's where you belong when you can't hold on to the football in the NFL. You're not the running back for long if you do that. So anyway, I do expect him to get more carries, and if he fumbles again, he runs the risk of losing his job like any running back.
All right, The Rock 8991. What are your thoughts on the Ravens playing in London for the first time?
I absolutely detest playing games outside the United States because of the travel impositions it puts on the team. So when I look at the schedule, I think it's a negative. It's a small negative to play a road game in London. It would be an enormous negative to play a home game in London. And frankly, if you're in the UK and you're a Ravens fan, it shouldn't matter whether this is a home or a road game to the Ravens. It's effectively, you can make it a home game if more Ravens fans show up. So I dislike playing over there for my team. I really do like the idea of trying to cultivate a European fan base and try and get that going. I just don't want to pay for it. It's kind of like taxes. I just don't want to pay for it.
And I don't like the 9:30 start. I think it's crazy, and I can't imagine if I was a Ravens fan out on the West Coast when it's 6:30 in the morning.
Yeah, that would be bad.
I also wonder if that helps with the West Coast teams to not have to travel to London as much.
Yeah, I guess they must. I don't know. I think Oakland has played there, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they haven't had anybody go there yet.
All right. GW Sure. I'm going to guess on that's how you pronounce the Twitter name.
Okay.
How will the play calling philosophy change without the 73 winning the wars solo?
Okay, so Yanda won a lot of one-on-one matchups by himself. He also did a wonderful job of setting up via combination block to win one battle himself and also help the center or the right tackle win a battle before he released to level two. It will change. I mean, you can't replace Marshall Yanda easy. I think they will run left more. I think they will have to do more scheming with tight ends, with Ricard, maybe with a sixth lineman to get additional blockers in there. But I don't think they'll be as effective running the ball with the base five linemen and a standard either the 12 or 21 package, meaning the two tight ends and one running back or one right end, one tight end, two running backs. I just don't think they'll be as successful doing it. A lot of teams try and run with three wide receivers on the field. The Ravens will be really limited in that way because it definitely accentuates the weakness that you have along the offensive line when you take the tight end out of the equation.
All right. And as expected, we got lots of questions this week about Marshall Yanda. Show Me Your O's Face asks, Who steps on calling plays for the offensive line with Yanda out? Who's the next captain up?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it may just fall to Jensen directly. I don't know if there's anybody else who really could do it. So if Hurst and Illuminor are playing guard, or Hurst and Bergstrom are playing guard, I would not expect either of them to do it. There is a possibility. One of the other possibilities is that they take Jensen out of center, put in Bowanko, who is a previous Jaguars player, at center, and have Jensen make the line calls from right guard. That'd be possible. So I guess there's a few different options, but I think it's the most likely thing is that Jensen makes the calls from here on. Yeah.
All right, and then at Josh Soroka, to wrap this up, says, I was listening to a friend of ours, Glenn Clark Radio, this week, and Glenn had on Gil Brandt from Sirius XM NFL, and he mentioned that the way Bowser is playing, he has a chance for Defensive Rookie of the Year. Is that true? Is my boy playing that well that he's going to get some attention?
Well, he increased his snaps from the first to the second game, so that's a great start for one thing. I think he is the Ravens' most complete Sam. The Ravens do seem to have decided that they're going to go with a three outside linebacker package, which means they have a spot to put Judon on the inside on passing down, so that solves that problem to a slight degree, make him more of a situational rusher. I think it makes a lot of sense that he's the starter. If he's the starter and gets enough snaps, absolutely it's possible. And he does a lot of things well. Gill is probably overrating the voters' ability to ascertain quality in a defensive player because it often comes down to sacks or interceptions for a defensive rookie of the year winner.
So rather than looking at real games, they just look at the stats and...
The guy who has four sacks and three interceptions and plays the run really well, right. That guy can't be defensive rookie of the year because the guy with 13 sacks is going to get it.
Gotcha. So you're saying they're not the smartest voters. I've got the same frustration with a lot of baseball voters. But at least that doesn't come down to a bunch of fans voting.
Yeah, it's the All-Star Game voting way, right. Popularity contest.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, all right, Ken. Well, I think that wraps up the offense for this week. Have a great trip to London, and enjoy taking some Baltimore over to the UK.
Life's good, Josh. I guess we'll talk to you a day or two later next week because coming home, it'll do a little extra time for analysis, but we'll probably have our first podcast on Wednesday next week.
All right, we'll figure it out.